Our scripture lesson this morning continues our theme with Journeying Together of turning to stories from the Old and New Testament that occur on or in or around a boat. And so let us listen for the word of the Lord from the book of Genesis. God said to Noah, "I will establish my covenant with you, and you shall come into the ark, you, your sons, your wife, and your sons' wives with you. And of every living thing, of all flesh, you shall bring two of every kind into the ark to keep them alive with you. They shall be male and female. Of the birds according to their kinds, and of the animals according to their kinds, of every creeping thing of the ground according to its kind, two of every kind shall come in to you to keep them alive." Noah did this. He did all that God commanded him. All the fountains of the great deep burst forth, and the windows of the heavens were opened. The rain fell on the earth for 40 days and 40 nights. The waters swelled and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the face of the waters. The waters swelled so mightily on the earth that all the high mountains under the whole heaven were covered. But God remembered Noah and all the wild animals and all the domestic animals that were with him in the ark. And God made a wind to blow over the water, and the waters subsided. The earth was dry. Then God said to Noah, "Go out of the ark, you and your wife and your sons' wives with you. Bring out with you every living thing that is with you of all flesh, birds and animals and every creeping thing that creeps on the earth, so that they may abound on the earth and be fruitful and multiply on the earth." Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and offered a burnt offering on the altar. Friends, this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. Our story from Scripture this morning is very likely one of the most familiar stories in the Bible. It's one that surrounds us. We are reminded of images of it all the time. Many children's Bibles have this story on the front cover. Many nurseries are painted with pictures of Noah's Ark in them. It's everywhere. This fall, our children and their children's choirs are working on a song that they'll sing in a couple of weeks based on telling this story. It's a call and response. Who built the ark? Noah. Noah. Who built the ark? Brother Noah built the ark. And I've heard that song at the breakfast table and in the carpool line every single day for the last few months. I'm glad for some other folks to get to hear it. Of course, being so familiar with the story comes at a cost, though, because sometimes we think we know all that there is in a story that we know so well. Without meaning to, we look over details that we'd never noticed before. Or maybe we skip over the parts of it we don't like to get to the fun parts of a story. Like we did in our scripture lesson just now, you'll notice we began with the ark already being built. The story, though, starts a lot earlier than that, with some painful, hard text to read about how corrupt and sinful all of creation had become because of the fall, and of God's deep, deep grief at how bad we creatures had messed up God's good creation. And in the midst of this grief and justice and righteousness, this hard questions that we wrestle with, we have a story that begins with God, not just the forces of nature, but God sending this flood to cleanse creation from what is unjust and unrighteous and sinful. Those parts of the story, the ones we often skip over, that we don't exactly tell our kids in vacation Bible school or as a bedtime story, those parts of the story, the hard parts, may be perhaps the parts of the story that we need to remember in our own lives. For we constantly continue to live in a world surrounded by sin, a world where death is doled out on a global scale, a world that feels as if it is doomed to destruction some days. This story follows a familiar pattern throughout Scripture. It's a story that begins with sin, and then punishment, and then moves into gracious renewal. And that's where we turn for our Scripture lesson today. For it's in the midst of all this awfulness, as bad as the world has gotten, that the story takes a new turn. That it presents us with the possibility of new creation. Noah, Noah's family, all the animals gathered there represent hope and possibility and mercy even in the midst of the awfulness. And the story is told in a way that is supposed to remind us of the first story of creation. Language about the waters above and the waters below. The pairs of animals described as those who fly or walk or creep. All creatures of our God and King. They're given the same command at the end of this story as is given at the end of the first creation story. To be fruitful and multiply. This is nothing short of new creation. The ark, surrounded with all these animals, has become, in the story, a sort of floating Garden of Eden, a second chance. In the midst of the tragedy, the horror, the destruction, the story speaks a profound word about God's providence, God's care, God's mercy, mixed and mingled with justice and righteousness. A new chance, a new creation. It was for this very reason that early Christians turned to the story of Noah and the ark from the Old Testament and borrowed that image as a way of describing the church itself. The vessel of salvation. The ship of the new creation. The new ark of the new covenant. When the old ways of the sinful world had done their worst, crucifying Christ on the cross. When death was doled out as punishment, not against all humanity, but against one on behalf of all humanity. When God again was grieved to God's deepest point. We know that the story doesn't end in sin, but it ends in grace, in renewal, in journeying together. And that's what the early church said that they were to be about. That's how they understood themselves, and it's a gift that they have given us through the ages. To see ourselves as those on the ship, on the ark, together with Christ. Like many of you, I've known this story since before I could remember learning it. Years and years, it's been there, just always there. And yet, this very week, I noticed something in it for the very first time. Maybe you have seen it before, but it was a first for me. In the text, part that we didn't read for our scripture lesson this morning, we have all these intricate details given about the building of the ark. So many cubits high, so many cubits wide, exactly what kind of wood to use, what kind of food goes in, all the details about the animals. But there's one thing that is not described, because it's not there. There are no sails on this ship. There are no oars or paddles. There's no rudder. There's no wheel to steer. They have built this vessel large enough to contain representatives of all creation in it, and there is absolutely no way for Noah to control where the ark is going. It's just a big box. And in getting on the ark, there is a profound act of trust, of letting go, of relinquishing control. Getting on to the ship where salvation is promised to come, but at the cost of being able to steer yourself. Carried by the waters, and then guided by God's hand alone. This ark is an exercise in trust of God's goodness and grace and mercy. And so this ship, the ark, teaches us something we need to remember about our own ship, about our stewardship. Anna made that joke earlier, and we laughed at the staff meeting. Y'all were supposed to as well. Stewardship. Our stewardship, our fellowship, our discipleship means getting onto a vessel that we do not control. It means being a part of the covenant made in Jesus Christ, the covenant with the new creation, sealed in His death and resurrection, and letting go of our own control. That's what stewardship, discipleship, is all about at its core. This weekend, I had the opportunity to chaperone our Girl Scout troop that meets at the church that my daughter's a member of on the Girl Scout Camperee up to a camp outside of Citronelle. It was a wonderful time. Not a lot of rest, but a wonderful time. About 100 girls who gathered from all around Mobile who went and they learned about how to start fires, how to navigate with a compass. They learned about archery, bow and arrow. They perfected the art of s'mores. But there was a new activity that the leaders planned for this event. At one point, all the girls were broken up into 10 groups, and they were given the task. Well, they didn't know what the task was at first. They were given a pile of cardboard and as much duct tape as is humanly possible to hold. And with nothing but these supplies, duct tape and cardboard, they had to construct a boat that would float in the lake, carrying a first grader in it, who had a life jacket on, I promise. Right? It was supposed to be an exercise in team building, and for some of the teams, it may have been. The ships that were created were something to behold. The armada, once it was assembled, were dragged down to be launched into the water. Some of them spent a lot of time on their design. There was one boat that even looked like a spaceship wrapped in silver duct tape. There was one that looked like a pontoon boat with large, long floats underneath. The problem was the pontoons fell off between the design floor and the launch site. Some of them were just boxes, arcs, you could call them, with not much shape to them, but a lot of buoyancy. The team that Loey and I were a part of, our boat did okay for a while. It had a problem, though, you see, a problem that some boats suffer from. That is, there were holes in the bottom of it. And that doesn't work too well. But I was fascinated by one team in particular, not the one we were on. One team, this group, spent a lot of time and energy designing this really cool paddle. It was made out of a long tubular piece of cardboard with flat pieces on the sides, everything wrapped and reinforced with duct tape, kind of a kayak paddle that could go both ways. It was amazing to see. The only problem was they spent so much time on their paddle that they ran out of time to really make their boat seaworthy. I couldn't help but think that is an image of who we so often are as a people, aren't we? We focus our time, our energy, our anxiety, our money around something that we are convinced gives us control, all the while ignorant to the truth that we, in fact, are sinking. What good does a paddle do when the boat is underwater? When it comes to the question of stewardship, Christian stewardship, I think there are often two responses, well, maybe three responses. One is to just ignore the call completely. One is, like that group and their paddle, to say, I'm going to spend my time and my energy and my resources on making sure I'm convinced I'm in control. I've got everything secure. I've got my paddle how I want it. And if there's a little left over at the end, sure, I'll make a gift to the church. But what we learn from the story of Noah is a very different approach to stewardship. One rooted in the biblical pattern of tithing, of giving first fruits to God, of saying, I am not in control. The exercise of stewardship is a Christian practice of letting go of any false paddles or sails or steering utensils that we think we can construct, and instead trusting in God's grace to carry us home. Trusting in God's providential care, not in our own cares and worries and concerns. It's not ignorant of the truth that the waters are coming, but the difference between first fruits and last fruits is the difference between a floating ark and a sinking ship. Where will we put our energy? Where will God's call to be faithful stewards lead us? Will we, like Noah and the whole rest of creation who journeyed together on that boat, put our trust in God's hands to carry us where we need to go?